From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1963, the start of the measles vaccination program. Until 1963, more than 3 million people got measles every year in the United States. Of those people, roughly 500 died, and another 48,000 were hospitalized. But just 37 years after the launch of the vaccination program, the United States declared, in the year 2000, that measles had been eliminated from this country. That doesn't mean that measles is entirely gone. It means that measles is no longer native to the United States. Every year, a few dozen people in this country get measles because it's carried by travelers who've been in unvaccinated areas or countries. But for the past several years, the number of annual measles cases has been rising. And now Disneyland in California is dealing with an outbreak. More than 80 people are confirmed to have gotten measles, and reports indicated that at least 28 of those people were not vaccinated. Health leaders in California are not only urging vaccination, they're telling unvaccinated people to stay away from Disneyland. So we wanted to know, is the anti-vaccine movement to blame here? And are we going to see more outbreaks like this as a result of the anti-vaccine movement? Then looking at vaccines more broadly, we can talk about flu and other questions you may have. In fact, we've already been getting a number of questions from listeners. We've got three outstanding doctors who are going to be joining us by phone this hour, and I appreciate them taking the time with their busy schedules. Two right now, and they include Dr. Michael Pachicaro, the director of Rochester General Hospital's Research Institute and a pediatrician. Dr. Pachicaro, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Dr. Paul Grayman's on the line with us as well. He's the clinical director of the Infectious Diseases Division at UR Medicine's Strong Memorial Hospital. Dr. Grayman, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
I'll start with you, Dr. Pachicaro. And, you know, I look at the headlines coming out of California and elsewhere. Here are some of the headlines. The LA Times railing in an editorial, blame the outbreak on anti-science stubbornness. Wired Online offering this headline, why did vaccinated people get measles at Disneyland? Blame the unvaccinated. Even the satirical Onion weighing in with a faux opinion piece, an anti-vaccine mother who declares, quote, as a parent, it's my right to decide which eradicated diseases come roaring back. Is that overstating it, in your view, Dr. Pachicaro, sort of looking at it as an outsider, looking at what's going on at Disneyland, or is there real concern that the anti-vaccine movement is affecting what's happening there?
I don't know that we're sure of the root causes of the situation, whether this is a grassroots activity or led by some sort of a movement. But we are seeing more parents declining to receive vaccinations at all, or in particular in the upstate New York area, on the recommended schedule. And once you break the schedule, very often, unfortunately, complete vaccination does not occur. So I think there's little doubt that the measles and all the vaccines that we use are highly effective, and that the majority, if not exclusively, the cases we're seeing are among the unvaccinated.
Dr. Grayman, same kind of question. Do you feel like you've got a sense enough of what's going on in Disneyland to say, yes, that the frustration with the anti-vaccine movement that we've seen expressed in those editorials, in those headlines, is valid?
Well, I think the frustration is definitely valid, because it is the unvaccinated among us that allow outbreaks or possibly epidemics of measles to occur. Now, people who refuse vaccination have many personal, in some cases religious, reasons to do that, and I don't think we can necessarily question all of the thought processes or motives that might go into that. But taken as a whole, vaccination for measles is extremely effective, and lacking vaccination, outbreaks, transmission of measles are going to occur. And when those outbreaks occur, the majority of the cases that happen are amongst the unvaccinated population. And once there are enough unvaccinated people who may become ill with measles, there is some risk, even to those who are vaccinated, a very small risk, that some of those people can come down with measles as well.
Well, Dr. Grayman, on that point, we've heard from listeners already this morning, and I know Diane Rehm discussed it with her panel a little bit earlier, but I think there are still some questions about how, if you look at these 80-plus people infected out of Disneyland, a number of them were vaccinated people. And so a number of our listeners are asking, well, if they were vaccinated, how would they end up with measles?
Well, the vaccine, if you get one dose of measles vaccine, is about 93% effective. If you get two doses, which is recommended, it's higher than 97% is effective, which means that a couple of people out of 100, even if they're vaccinated and come in contact with measles, could still get the measles. But keep in mind this. If you're unvaccinated and you have contact with someone else who has the measles, you have a 90% chance or higher of getting the measles. And that is reduced by close to 100%, somewhere between 97% and 100%, if you've had the vaccine. Now, consider that probably the large majority of people, children and adults, visiting Disneyland in the many, many thousands have been vaccinated. So even a couple of percent of many, many thousands would amount to a few people who might still be at risk. I think people have to put in perspective the risk of non-vaccination versus vaccination, and the risk is close to 100% higher for those who are unvaccinated than vaccinated.
In other words, Dr. Grayman, it should be no surprise that a number of the infected in Disneyland were vaccinated just based on the numbers and just based on the fact that there were thousands upon thousands of people there. And then furthermore,
correct,
if all of the thousands of people at Disneyland were unvaccinated, we would be looking at 90% or more of them potentially having measles and spreading it in a much more serious way. Is that all fair to say?
I think that's fair.
Okay. Dr. Pikikara, you heard Dr. Grayman say, talk about the fact that there are sometimes religious exceptions. I know 20 states offer exemptions of some kind for vaccination. And one of the questions in the wake of what we're seeing in Disneyland is, do we need to tighten that up? And we've even heard commentary from some in the medical community saying it's time to start more aggressively seeing doctors, quote unquote, fire patients. Is that too strong? Or do we need to get stronger about vaccines?
So, Evan, I do agree that we have a rising public health problem. And how to deal with that in the United States of America is a challenge. As we do believe in our country about independence and freedom of choice, at the same time, as a community, have an obligation to the greater good. And in that respect, I would say, you know, vaccinating your child and vaccinating yourself as an adult contributes to the greater good of protection of the community. In terms of your second question, yes, I'm aware that a substantial proportion of primary care physicians in the upstate New York area, your listening area, are firing patients. It will not allow families who refuse vaccination to remain in their practice. The rationale is, in a microcosm of what you see in Disneyland, allowing unvaccinated children to be in their waiting rooms unnecessarily exposes their other patients who are vaccinated to that small risk that Dr. Grayman just mentioned of contracting the illness in the doctor's waiting room. So my partner in private practice, Dr. Janet Casey, has refused to accept patients who will not take vaccination. My strategy has been to try to work with the families over a period of months to peel back the misinformation that leads to a decision not to vaccinate. And this has been led by high-profile media people who have been misinformed and in many cases have changed their mind. But once something is implanted in the public knowledge sphere, it's very hard to get it out.
You're hearing from Dr. Michael Pikikara, who is a pediatrician and the director of Rochester General Hospital's Research Institute. Dr. Paul Grayman's also on the line with us, the clinical director of the Infectious Diseases Division at UR Medicine's Strong Memorial Hospital. And as Dr. Pikikara said, he chooses to work with patients and try to change their mind, especially parents who are concerned about their kids. Whereas Dr. Casey and some others have said that that they're going to take a different approach, that they will, quote unquote, fire or refuse patients. And I obviously, I think the medical community, I think this debate is reflective of the fact that there's not an easy single answer here. But let me read from the LA Times. The LA Times out with a story today, and again, following up on this situation at Disneyland. And the headline from the LA Times, parents who oppose measles vaccine hold firm to their belief. They quote Nicole, a mother of two from Mission Viejo, California, who did not want to leave her last name. She said, "It's such an unpopular thing not to vaccinate among my friends. I don't want to be paraded through the mud for my choice." But since the measles outbreak, she says she's remained focused on ensuring her children simply have optimal nutrition, a vitamin-rich diet, and she is monitoring them closely, but says she does not plan to vaccinate them. And she says at least two doctors have now refused to keep her children in their practice. Dr. Grayman, I don't know if you take a position on the question of refusing patients, but I know, again, it's reflective of the medical community's debate about how to handle this. Do you take a position on that?
No, I don't. I'm not a pediatrician, so I'm
right.
Not dealing with children on a regular basis. You know, I think these decisions have to be up to the individual physician. I think refusing patients into a practice may ultimately do more harm than good. I'm not sure that's going to change the mind of parents who are reluctant to vaccinate and then deprives those children of the other benefits of regular health care. So I think that's a rather extreme position to take, but neither do I blame physicians for feeling that the time has come to take a stronger point of view.
Let me also quote from that same article where the LA Times talked to Gary Monahan, who is a town councilman in Costa Mesa City, California. He's got six kids. He's skipped vaccinations for the last four. And his quote is, "How do I say this without sounding crazy? I don't want anyone to get measles, but you have to make it easier for the parents through the health system to do it the right way. Pounding three live viruses into somebody at 1 year old is devastating," end quote. He's talking MMR. I'll start with you, Dr. Grayman, and then Dr. Pekikro. A reaction to that statement, and again, Gary's not a doctor, he's a parent, but he says pounding three live viruses at 1 year old is devastating. Dr. Grayman?
Well, I think he's wrong. I mean, that's based on some belief that somehow the number of viruses that are in the vaccine make it a dangerous vaccine. This is an extraordinarily effective and safe vaccine. Any side effects from the vaccine are very minor and short-lived. Soreness in the arm, occasionally some low fever. More serious vaccinations are extraordinarily rare. And millions and millions upon millions of Americans and people around the world have received this vaccine. And it is about as safe as any other vaccine that there is. And it's far safer than driving your car across town with your children in the car. So I think one has to put the risks that we encounter in our lives into perspective. Among people who get the measles, about 1 in 1,000 of children who get the measles will die. About 10 to 15% of measles patients, adults and children, are sick enough that they need to be in the hospital. 1 in 1,000 children with measles will have encephalitis, that's inflammation of the brain, which may leave them seriously neurologically having difficulties for the rest of their lives. Those are very big prices to pay for having the measles, for a vaccine that is close to 100% effective in preventing the measles. So one has to, I think, appreciate what the risks are and what the benefits are from a vaccination. The benefits outnumber the risk by millions of times over.
And Dr. Pekikro, when I read that comment in the LA Times from that parent who claims that pounding three live viruses into a one-year-old is devastating, I actually thought the LA Times had a responsibility to follow up by saying, well, the science indicates it is not devastating, but they don't. They sort of let that statement hang there. I mean, science proves that that's wrong, doesn't it?
Yes, Evan, that's exactly my response to that. You know, in order, originally, measles, mumps, and rubella were individual vaccines. and the Food and Drug Administration requires that whenever you go to combine any vaccine in a product, it has to be studied very thoroughly to prove that it remains as safe and as effective. So, in fact, the original individual measles, mumps, rubella vaccines were given at a point in time. And then, for those who don't remember the history, it was measles and rubella that were combined into a double vaccine for a period of time until the research proved that all three could be combined without having any increase in risks in terms of side effects and while still maintaining the same immunity response to all three ingredients. So this is where we need to improve our information stream back to the public to let them know that when vaccines are combined, it's thoroughly studied to be sure that it would never be devastating to a child. And in fact, put this in perspective. As a child is there to receive such a vaccine, they are dealing with not hundreds, but tens of thousands of viruses and bacteria that they're controlling with their super immune system. So those three little vaccines are such a minor overall component to the immune system surveillance that it's impossible to prove that there would be any problem from giving such a vaccine to a child in terms of overwhelming their system. Moreover, I want to go back to the parent who said, you know, I give my child nutrition and vitamins and keep them clean.
Sure.
These are all good health ideas, but that's not going to prevent her child from getting the measles. And going one step further, Evan, Dr. Grayman pointed out some very good things about the outbreak at Disneyland and that we will see some vaccinated individuals contract the measles. But what he didn't mention, but I'm sure he knows, is those who had the vaccine who do contract the measles generally experience a very, very mild case. And whereas if you contract the infection without having been vaccinated, that's where the risks that Dr. Grayman is mentioning of 1 in 1,000 children could die.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Pachicaro and Dr. Paul Grayman, and I'm going to get to your calls in just a moment. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Let me also let our callers know, before we jump onto the phone lines there, that I so appreciate our doctors taking the time for us, Dr. Pachicaro for the hour. Dr. Paul Grayman's going to be here for a few more minutes, and then we're going to be talking to Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg from UR Medicine's Golisano's Children's Hospital. But because our doctors are on the phone, we're somewhat limited. So if we come to you for a phone call, we can get your questions and comments, but then we've got to get back to the doctors, and unfortunately we can't follow up. So that's the one caveat, and let's go ahead and start that now. I want to turn it over to David in Pittsburgh. I also want to tell our callers, if you want to call in either with questions about vaccines, you want to write into the program, or if you want to talk about your feelings about perhaps you don't vaccinate, we're going to try to be open-minded and air your thoughts and questions and do it in a way that I think is going to be as productive as possible. So let me go ahead and turn it over to David in Pittsburgh. David, you're on Connections. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the real problem, the doctors are trying to use facts and logic in order to encourage people to get vaccinated, and I buy that. But I think we have a population, there is a small population of people who do not buy that approach. They don't trust the government, they don't trust establishments, they don't trust the medical establishment, they don't trust authorities, they don't trust facts. And that small fraction of the population, if you want to get them to be vaccinated, you're going to have to take another approach to dealing with them.
What approach are you thinking?
I don't know the approach. You can go to their pastors or something and see if you can sell them to accept it or not. But, you know, you've got, for example, you've got so much corruption in Albany. So there, you've got corruption in Washington. The Democrats don't trust Republicans. Republicans don't trust the Democrats. And so, you know, we have a situation where where we're not running based on facts and logic.
David, thanks for the call. I appreciate that, and let me start with Dr. Grayman. Dr. Grayman, he's saying we've got to try a different approach to reach some people. He mentioned going to their pastor. It's not always a religious exemption for those who don't vaccinate. I know a number of people who are really well-meaning and smart people, caring parents, and it's not a religious situation with them. It is a sort of a distrust of what they consider a medical industry or the government, et cetera. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think people have all kinds of reasons. Probably a minority of those are for strictly religious reasons. And it's very difficult, I think, to get through to people who aren't going to trust any voice of authority, whether it be the government. And I think all of us experience frustration with our government today. But to extend that to their physicians, to scientists, to anybody who's trying to provide the best advice, that's a very difficult person to reach. But I think smart people can evaluate the facts that are provided to them. And the only way, I think, to fight ignorance is to provide more education and facts, and hopefully have people appreciate that the benefits of vaccination are so far and away greater than the risks, that is really makes little sense to oppose it. And again, I think people need to put risks in the context of the rest of their daily lives. When the risk of dying in a car accident is so many orders of magnitude greater than having a complication from a vaccine, it would follow that that adults wouldn't allow their children to drive in the car. And I don't know many parents who would take that position, because the benefits of using a car are far exceed, in their judgment, any possible risk of dying in an accident. And the safety of vaccination and the benefits that go with it are really far more compelling even than that example.
Dr. Pekikaro, regarding that, David's points about the sort of the psychological perspective that people have that says, I'm just not going to trust this. I know you've encountered that too. What do you do about it?
Well, I do try to answer questions openly and thoughtfully. At the end of the day, I'm very confident when I tell families that I vaccinated my own children. And right now, I have a 2-year-old grandchild, the love of my life, and she has received all of the recommended vaccines of the American Academy of Pediatrics right on the recommended schedule. If anyone were to think that I would do something that would jeopardize in any way the health of my own children and my own grandchild, that usually does resonate with a parent and gains their confidence. I don't know that we can legislate our way out of this situation. There certainly is active discussion. How do you balance the multitude of claims for exemption that, as you just said, Evan, are not religious, but they're personal decisions that families are making with misinformation? I don't know that legislation is the right way to go, but that certainly is being discussed.
All right, Dr. Grayman, before I let you go, some final thoughts from you regarding going forward here. Is there a feeling in the medical community, or at least from your own perspective, do you expect that we will see more outbreaks like we saw at Disneyland because of this situation, because of the rising numbers in the anti-vaccine movement?
I think it's inevitable. The more people who go unvaccinated in a society, the more certainty there is that outbreaks will occur in the future. It only takes one person entering a community who has measles to begin an outbreak spreading. That person is very often coming from abroad, where measles might be more common and vaccination might be less certain to have occurred. But once that person enters an environment like Disney World, where there's tens of thousands of other people around them, the more of those people who are unvaccinated, the more likely it is that we're going to continue to see outbreaks and larger outbreaks. I think it's inevitable.
And Dr. Grayman, we have a question from a listener, and I think you would be well suited to answer it. Mark wants to know what other diseases are likely to make a comeback if this movement continues.
Well, I think one that we do see is pertussis. We see cases of pertussis intermittently over the years, but we occasionally have outbreaks of pertussis, that's whooping cough, and that may have some of an recurrence as well if we see the vaccination for whooping cough diminishing. Even with influenza, amongst healthcare workers now, it has really become the standard that everyone who works in healthcare be vaccinated. In some areas of the country, it is the law that they be vaccinated. In most other areas, including here, it is not the law that they be vaccinated, but there is a lot of motivation for people to be vaccinated. So even the flu is an example where we may see outbreaks in this country that are worse than we have seen in the past if people don't get flu vaccine.
Dr. Paul Grayman, the Clinical Director of the Infectious Diseases Division at UR Medicine Strong Memorial Hospital, thanks for taking the time for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, short break. We're coming back with not only Dr. Pikicaro, but Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg from Golisano Children's Hospital joins us. Your phone calls as well. If you're waiting to join the program, we will get to you as well as we talk about vaccines here on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, longtime journalist Lynn Scherr joins us. She's coming to Rochester soon as a guest of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House, and Scherr is the author of books about Sally Ride, America's first woman in space, and Susan B. Anthony herself. Lynn Scherr joins us to talk about Sally Ride, Susan B. Anthony, and why we don't need a new feminism. We'll talk to Lynn Scherr next hour.
It's taking weeks to select a jury for the Boston Marathon bombing trial. The judge has rejected requests to move the case elsewhere. Many lawyers disagree.
I don't think it's a close call. And if this case doesn't get moved, what one would get moved?
Looking for an impartial jury in Boston later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and as we talk about what's going on in Disneyland in California, where a measles outbreak in December has now spread to more than 80 people, many of them unvaccinated people, it's a good opportunity for me to welcome in for another 30 to 40 seconds. It's always these bursts of reminding you that Michelle Faust, my colleague in the newsroom, is working on questions related to the Affordable Care Act. Hi, Michelle.
Yeah, we're always talking about the Affordable Care Act and any innovations in healthcare. And that's something that we're talking about all the time. If you want to check that out, you can see stories about the topic at WXXI.org/ACA. Follow our hashtag ACAWXXI. And we're taking your questions. We need some more questions as we continue to profile people and get answers for anything that you have to question about the Affordable Care Act, ACAWXXI@WXXI.org.
All right. Thank you. It's always good to see you. And again, that's Michelle Faust. Hope that you can, again, join that part of the conversation with us as we go forward here on WXXI. I want to get a phone call in before we turn back to our medical professionals. Again, great work by our engineers this hour, helping out with all the phone lines and all the interest. So let me get to Jill and Hector, who has been waiting a while to get in and weigh in on the conversation. Jill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks.
Hi.
For calling. Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, I just wanted to speak on behalf of the people who choose not to vaccinate their children. I know a number of them. I vaccinated my son, but I personally haven't gotten the flu vaccine, and I don't intend to. But there's some points that your folks are missing, your experts here. And one is that the folks that don't get vaccination, follow the prescribed vaccination schedule for their children, make a point of exposing their children to these diseases whenever possible. I call them chicken pox parties, but I'll hear about a number of friends who've, you know, they're like, oh, so-and-so's child has chicken pox. We're all going over to their house so our kids can get it too and, you know, get the immunity that comes from a from the chickenpox. And so they do actually get immunity through exposure, and it's very controlled. They keep the kids home, you know, while they have the disease. And so, I mean, people, it's not like people are going around leaving their children at risk. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is that, you know, you presented these people as crazies, and they're not. They are extremely rational. They do their homework. There are many, many reasons why people choose not to vaccinate their children. But the biggest one that I've noticed is the concern about the additives. It's not necessarily the vaccine per se, but when they talk to me, they'll bring me a list of a printout of all of the ingredients in the vaccine. And these are people that normally are seriously trying to reduce the toxic load that their children receive, okay? And that means toxic chemicals that accumulate over our lifetimes in our bodies through exposure to pesticides and you know, lawn care chemicals and all kinds of things like that. So they're very concerned about the toxic load and the corollary ingredients in the vaccine. And the third one is, I just want to speak very briefly and concur with an earlier caller who said that the problem is really credibility. And I don't mean to be offensive when I say this, but the government has very poor credibility. When you obscure the truth from people and they feel they're not getting, and they find out that they're not getting all the facts, whether it's for their own good, I'm doing finger quotes here, or not, people lose faith in what the government says. So you can have all the panels of government experts you want, but, you know, people aren't believing what government experts say. And it's unfortunate, but it's not my fault. I'm not the one that tells
I'm with you, Jill. And before I let you go, Jill, let me just follow up with you before I turn it over to the doctors. Because I, first of all, I appreciate the idea that I certainly didn't intend to imply that people who don't vaccinate are crazy. I think they are making decisions that they think are best, and I think they love their kids, and I think they care about themselves and their family. Yes, there have been a string of scathing editorials, whether it's the LA Times or elsewhere, that are making these a little bit more pointed comments. But let me also ask you this, then. You know, I opened the program by noting that until 1963 and the measles vaccine program was introduced, there were 3 to 4 million people a year in this country with measles. And in 37 years, it went to close to zero. And do you connect that to vaccination?
Yes, I do. I do. But I would also say that 80 people is not something to panic over, okay?
That's fair.
And most of those cases are going to be mild because those people chose to have, their rational decision was to have the vaccine, okay? I remember when the polio vaccine came out. I had a cousin who had polio, and I was old enough that when the polio vaccine came out, my mother was so excited. And we got vaccinated for polio right there, you know, just as soon as it was available. And it is, vaccines can be a great benefit to mankind. But the vaccines that are being put out now are not your grandmother's vaccines, okay? They are highly engineered. They have a cocktail of toxic ingredients, granted it's small doses, but again, toxic load is something that accumulates over a lifetime. And these people are making a rational, well-informed, well-researched research decision to not to add to that toxic load in what they consider to be an unnecessary way.
Yeah, and, okay. Jill, first of all, thank you for the call. Let me go ahead and say that I want to hand it over to our doctors who have given us such great time this hour as we talk about this. So that's Jill and Hector. I want to introduce Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg, who's now on the line with us as well. Dr. Weinberg is the pediatric infectious disease specialist at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Weinberg, thank you for taking the time.
Yes, thank you.
All right, you had a chance to listen to Jill and Hector, and she had a number of points.
I have. They're good points that I wouldn't mind commenting.
So I know Dr. Piccaro as well. So go ahead, Dr. Weinberg. Let's start.
Yeah.
Let's start with the chicken pox parties. That's how they expose kids. They build up their own immunity in a controlled setting.
Yeah, I think that if you don't mind, I'd like to broaden it a little bit.
Oh, sure.
I've been
sure.
listening to you and to Paul and to Mike, and I think one of the problems we have in this sort of public debate is I think we actually have to turn the the conversation back around to the children. Yes, it's true that if you immunize against measles, you protect the herd. Yes, that's very valuable. But the real reason to immunize your children is for the safety of your children. It's exactly as Dr. Grayman indicated. You are far more likely, and the reason I go back to this is it has direct influence on these parties, so to speak. You are far more likely to get injured by the natural disease than you are by any of the vaccines we currently use. And I'm old enough that I do remember my parents talking about measles parties and rubella parties and chickenpox parties because that was in the early 60s, and that was the pre-vaccine era. But actually, there are risks. Yes, we usually think chickenpox is a mild disease, but both Dr. Pickerow and I have admitted many, many children with severe chickenpox, with either chickenpox encephalitis, with bacterial infections from chickenpox, and it, and I have seen them when people have done them. You know, I didn't think it was a problem to expose my child to chickenpox, and then look what happened. And it is in anybody's one party with a few kids, you might get that reassurance that, gee, all the kids were fine. But actually, statistically, it is much more dangerous to try and protect your children by giving them natural diseases than it is to use the vaccines. Second of all, for some of the illnesses, it may be misdiagnosed. There isn't a lot of chickenpox in the community, fortunately now, because of vaccination. And many of our young people don't even know, many of our young doctors don't even, are too young to have seen measles itself. So if you're thinking that you're protecting your children by taking them to these parties because you think somebody, because the putative diagnosis is measles and it's a different virus, then you're actually getting false reassurance. So I think, and the third point is, I would disagree with Joan a bit that the vaccines that are used now actually have extraordinarily less toxicity than the vaccines that were done originally and that resulted in such great initial decrease in disease and that were given to all of us as we were growing up. There are many of the information about toxic adjuvants and toxic load is incorrect, and there are actually fewer antigens we give, even though this is a hard concept to get across. But if you count up all the chemicals and antigens that are in the vaccine schedule of today, even though we immunize against many more diseases, chemically there's less side stuff in there than there was in the past. And finally, I agree that it's difficult, as many of the listeners and even Dr. Grayman mentioned, that sometimes it is difficult to not assign a credibility problem to the government. But actually, there are many of us who are totally independent of the government, those of us in the American Academy of Pediatrics, Pediatric Infectious Disease Society, the Infectious Disease Society of America. Many independent bodies are very supportive and strongly so of vaccination. It's not just a government versus us type of problem. So I think those are the points that I try and make with parents who are questioning the need for vaccination or whether it's an alternative process to do an exposure party. I really think it's better to do the vaccination.
On Twitter, Dr. Elizabeth Murray writes, "They're not your grandmother's vaccine, correct? They're healthier and safer."
That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah.
Thank you to Dr. Murray. I know her, in fact.
And Joe on Twitter says, "You don't need to have faith in the government to realize that vaccines work. Does anyone in the U.S. get polio anymore?" We don't mean to belittle, but at the same time, I think there is a concern that when you look at just the individual components and additive of something that makes that appears in a vaccine, that it can be frightening if you don't have a little bit more information or the complete picture. And if Dr. Pickerow, we're going to try to get Dr. Pickerow back on the line here. Dr. Weinberg, on the question of additives and that toxicity, as you said, there's a lot of misinformation about toxic load, but you know, when you look at that ingredient list, I'm sure you get questions from parents who say, "Really, is this safe, et cetera?"
There are actually very few ingredients at all in the vaccines. There are parts of their ingredients that there's a need to solubilize them, that is, put them into liquid form, And so there are sometimes buffers and salts, the same types of things that are in foods that are done. There are preservatives for certain vaccines and not others. And we as an industry, as a nation, have actually led the world in trying to reduce those preservatives. And I think the notion of toxic load and milligrams of this or that is not rooted in toxicology and pharmacology. The little types of this microscopic amounts of these salts and buffers and even the preservatives are metabolized by the children, and they are not loaded up, so to speak, in the food chain like we think of as, you know, when we talk about animals eating a certain substance and then having it in their body and going up the chain to other animals. And this has actually been demonstrated by looking at blood analysis, chemical analysis, hair analysis, where a lot of toxic substances, if they were present, toxic metals, et cetera, would be there, and it just isn't there. And the risks of the diseases are there.
Well, I can say
there have been deaths from measles, by the way, and even in recent years. And we've had several children die of pertussis who were under-vaccinated or unvaccinated. And, I mean, I see that with my own eyes, that the deaths that occur.
My engineer tells us that Jill from Hector called back to thank our doctors for the panel.
She said, thank her for her good question.
Absolutely. She says very informative to her, and she hopes to her friends as well. And so there you go, Dr. Weinberg. For anybody who wonders about, you know, can we change minds? I always say my mind can be changed about anything with evidence.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem with when you were mentioning earlier about should we legislate this or that? Well, yes, there is a certain role for legislation in terms of, I do believe that states shouldn't allow refusal just based on any old idea. I think if there are recognized religious reasons or if a child is immunosuppressed, there need to be exceptions, and there may be valid exceptions for other types either. But I would mention that, I mean, some people choose to think that they can drive around without seatbelts, and yet we do impose laws that seatbelts should be buckled. So there is precedence to think about things for the public good. You can say, well, if I'm in a crash and I hurt myself without a seatbelt, what's it to you? Well, to me, as a taxpayer, it's because we're going to take care of you still, and your lack of prevention is going to block a hospital bed, and we're going to spend money on trying to get you better.
Sure.
On something you could have done yourself by wearing a seatbelt.
We're talking to
I think there are some precedents for legislation.
Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg and Dr. Michael Pachicaro, let me jump back to the phones one more time because I think we're mm-hmm. going to lose the last 10 minutes very quickly this hour. And so let's go ahead and get back to the phones. This is in Rochester, I believe. This is Akansha. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, Akansha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Akansha. I am a medical student currently doing a public health fellowship, so I'm working with a lot of passionate people who really want to protect the, you know, American population. And I just wanted to bring up something that's been touched on, that a lot of people who are against vaccines are bringing out information that they think support their beliefs, but I just want to say that all information is not equal and that there's no one more skeptical of science than scientists themselves. The scientific process is full of people arguing and, like, you know, evidence trying to disprove everything. So it's just important, I think, for us to know how to read the different research and the different information that's out there when we're using it to make our beliefs.
Hear, hear, Akansha. Well said. Thanks for calling the program. And that's a great reminder to even myself. And that's why I said earlier in the hour, when the LA Times reported on the parents who are still opposing measles vaccines and just quoting them, ripping vaccinations, without pointing out that a lot of what they claim is scientifically or factually inaccurate. So, Dr. Pachicaro, you want to follow up on what Akansha just said?
The point is well taken. Throughout this conversation, there seems to be a thread of the notion that there's collusion between scientific researchers such as myself and Dr. Weinberg and Dr. Grayman and the government or the vaccine companies. And this is impossible to occur. Everything we do in science these days, you have to not only have the absolute rigorous proof by modern scientific methods, but your research has to be reproduced and validated by independent scientists elsewhere. Science builds on the notion that, you know, you can't fake it. So in this venue and in others, my notebooks are open to anyone who has the authority to come and see them, which includes a variety of regulatory authorities, to come to the Rochester General Hospital Research Institute, open our notebooks, and see that the results we're producing about how vaccines work, in fact, are accurate data. We are working right now on a vaccine that we hope to introduce to the Rochester community to prevent ear infections. We hope that that vaccine will be ready in 2016 or 2017. I've worked over a decade to get ready for that, and I hope that if we give a vaccine that prevents ear infections, and in fact it'll also prevent sinus infections and pneumonia, that the public will be receptive to give it to their children.
Let me get Jennifer's comment in here. Jennifer writes to the program, most people in my office got flu shots this year, and yet my colleague just came down with the flu. Dr. Weinberg, we're hearing from people who say, hey, I got a flu shot and I still got the flu. Are we seeing more mutations this year?
Well, we are. Flu is a bit of a special case when it comes to vaccinations. Vaccinations like measles and chickenpox are excellent at preventing disease, and those viruses don't mutate, so they don't escape the vaccination. Influenza is a very mutatable virus, and forecasting how to make next year's influenza vaccine the best it can be is a very difficult process, which has some parallel to forecasting the weather. And just as all of us know, because we listen to the weatherman and we complain about whether the forecast was correct or not, there are years when we didn't get the forecast correctly. And so, yes, there are some people who are getting influenza who have been vaccinated. But remember, the influenza vaccine, we used to have three viruses in it. Now there are four. It's still a good idea because there are swings in the influenza epidemic so that at the end of the year, oftentimes a new strain comes along, and I still heavily advocate influenza vaccines because even if the forecast wasn't so good for one of the four, it may be better for the others, and historically has been so. So more years than not, just as the weather forecasting, more days than not, it's correct. More years than not, it's correct. But this year may be a year that we complain about, just as certain snowstorms that were missed or et cetera.
Dr. Weinberg, I'll ask you a last question for you this hour. Do you suspect, like your colleagues have said, that we are going to see more outbreaks like this? And look, I take the point that others have made, Jill and Hector raised and others, that we don't want to make it seem like 81 people or whatever the number is now is a nationwide epidemic. But at the same time, part of the reason we're covering this story is the question of whether this is going to become more common if we see more people resisting vaccination. Is this going to become more common?
I think yes and no. I think it will be more common in the country as a whole. I'm not hugely concerned about Rochester at the moment because our numbers of under-immunized and non-immunized or vaccine-refusing populations is lower than in California. Some data just came out in the journals this month that there are pockets of vaccine-refusing families, and that is often where the illnesses will hit. And remember, as Dr. Grayman said, Disneyland attracts a huge amount of international visitors every year. And so I think it was sort of the perfect brush fire waiting for an international importation of measles to be the match. But I think this is a conversation that has to be ongoing, because I think we risk getting back to some of the old days where we had more vaccine and less vaccines and more disease induced injury to our children.
And last,
we don't want that.
And last comment, Dr. Pecicchero, if you do the math, it's 80 plus people right now, but if that entire park were unvaccinated, it would be thousands of people, and we would be talking about a very, very different story, right?
Yes, we would be, and this is going to continue as an ongoing public health concern, and I think it was brilliant for you to bring it on the air and let your listeners hear about some of the scientific evidence as opposed to less than optimal scientific information so that they can be informed.
Dr. Michael Pecicchero is the director of Rochester General Hospital's Research Institute and a pediatrician. And always appreciate the time, doctor, and I know we'll talk to you again. Thank you. Dr. Jeffrey Weinberg is the pediatric infectious disease specialist at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Weinberg, likewise, appreciate the time and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry I couldn't be there in person.
Oh, no worries at all. Everyone's got a busy Monday, and thanks to our listeners. If you called the program and couldn't get through this hour, we had a lot of phone calls, a lot of comments online, and certainly a lot of interest in this subject. It's not the last you'll hear of the question of vaccines on Connections. Short break and more with you next on member-supported public radio.